This is NBC News Radio.
Want to reverse climate change? Then join us as we march with Coach Smallwood, director of the Rodale Institute, to deliver the answers to Washington, D.C. policymakers. Coach has led many a team to victory and is asking us to join his team to accomplish reversing climate change and cleaning up our food and environment at the same time. Join us today at 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time for Smart Health Talk and meet Coach Smallwood and find out what they discovered at the Rodale Institute, where high tech meets old tech as a way of working our soil. Coach knows he needs to put together a winning team to make it all happen. So tune in at 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on the dial at 10:50 a.m. for those living in the Inland Empire. And if you got an internet connection, go to kcaexpress.com for shortcuts to listen on TuneIn or watch on Ustream. No internet, no problem. Just call 832-999-1050. Podcast posted after the show, so share this broadcast.
All aboard the Inland Empire Express. 10:50 a.m., leaving no listeners behind. KCAA.
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive? Right before me, my newfound hippie side. Once ignore these conspiracies online. Out the window, village of the earth. Sign me up now, make sure you use your smart. Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive? Your children lie to see Mother Nature's sign.
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome, everyone, to Smart Health Talk Radio Show. And I tell you, not only is it through rain and shine and all of that stuff that we put on the show for you, but even with mechanical breakdowns. So we're lucky enough to have our car break down right near a gas station. So if you hear a little rattling of soda bottles in the background, it's not something that we promote, okay? We actually try to discourage those kind of things. And what we do try to promote on Smart Health Talk is healthy choices that are going to give you a chance to live a long, healthy life. And not just that, but quality of life, where you're enjoying your life. And as a dietitian, I've really spent a lot of time researching what is the very best food that's going to help us achieve that level of quality of life. And there is just one simple answer, and that is real organic quality food, because those are the highest quality. And there's nothing else that I could personally recommend. I cannot recommend food that has pesticides that our top scientists in the country are saying can be responsible for all different kinds of diseases, not just diseases, but things that are neurotoxins that attack our babies, the fetuses, while our women are pregnant. And not just that, but our children and their development and their ability to have a high IQ, just so many different things. And the thing is, we don't have to live like that. We don't have to eat food with pesticides and poisons on it. We actually have a choice. And so many people think that something like organic food, something as simple as organic food that sustained people of over hundreds and thousands of years, that it is not possible to feed the world that way. And all the scientists I talk to say absolutely it's possible. Not just that, that it actually, we get lots of other benefits when we start transitioning to an organic farming system. And I tell you, the guest that we have on our show today, this is Coach Mark Smallwood, everybody, and he is the director of the Rodale Institute, and I can't wait for all of you to learn about the Rodale Institute, number one, because it is actually one of our greatest resources that we have in this country, but not just the country, the entire world, because there is no place where research on all different kinds of farming methods, not just organic, but really looking seriously at all different kinds of farming methods and for the truth, you know, which is the best farming method for us. These are the people that are looking at that longer than anybody else ever since the 1930s. And we're going to find out about that. We're going to find out about Coach, who's like just a terrific guy. And he is like determined. He is determined to make a difference in climate change because he has looked at the research, everyone. He has looked at the research and the facts are clear. The facts are absolutely clear in that organic farming can help reverse climate change. It could change our world, and we have to listen to Coach here. I tell you, he is a man that has been out there coaching basketball teams, taking them to championships. He knows how to win, and like that's the kind of people that I want to hang out with because we can't waste time here. We can't make wrong choices. We have to put our time and our focus and our money and everything into what is going to work the fastest and the best for all of us. And what do you say, Coach? Did I get it right? I mean, is that
wow,
pretty much where we're at with organic farming?
That was awfully kind, beyond kind. But you're absolutely right. There's nothing better than winning the game that you're in. I mean, that's why you're in the game in the first place. And I
like winning because I like to think that I choose the good side, you know, the side that is going to be providing us the most benefit, not just now, but like we're looking long term, aren't we?
Well, I hope we're thinking long term. I think short term is more important right now. We need to make a change.
Okay.
And so as you're talking about our research and what we stand for and who we are at the Rodale Institute, it's clear that we have an answer to climate change, not just mitigating it, but actually reversing it.
I know, and all these people are running around like, what do we do, what do we do, what do we do? And here's Coach over here saying, hey, I got it, everybody.
Yeah.
I got the answer right here, okay? How does that feel, Coach, knowing, you know, that you have the answer? I mean, it must just drive you it crazy, you know, because when you see all these people, like, running around acting like we don't know what to do, when it's, like, clear to you, and that's probably part of the motivation is that, hey, I'm taking this to Washington, D.C.
Yes, I am taking it to Washington, D.C. Elaine, you know what? The way I look at it now is the climate events that are occurring, they're historical in nature, the magnitude, the multiple numbers of occurrences that are historic. Everybody's,
so this is there is nothing that we can reference where we see these kind of patterns.
Correct. And everybody looks at it, and they scratch their head, and there's really no answer coming from industry, coming from government, and the answer lies in agriculture. But let me first say that I think the climate events and climate change are actually a gift. It's a gift from nature. Mother Nature is sort of bonking us on the head every time we have one of these events and saying, okay, everybody, wake up. Here's your wake-up call.
It's
not too late.
It's nature telling us the truth of what's to come and what's causing it and from what we're doing. You know, this is not something that's been happening before. This is humans introducing chemicals that are man-made, that are toxic than anything else around.
And we do agree with you, and we feel that agriculture, as it has evolved over the last 70 years, 100 years, has played a part in it. Part of the problem, Elaine, what we would like to do is now have agriculture be the solution. And the thing is, that's doable, isn't it?
I mean, it's not something that's beyond our reach. I mean, this is something that's doable, and that's what you guys look at the Rodale Institute. I mean, what you do there is so fascinating to me because you guys do, you know, of course, you want the results to show that organic farming is giving us the yields that we want and is going to be able to sustain large numbers of people and those kind of things that everyone wants. But you're looking at all different kinds of farming, and you're looking at multiple outcomes that come with these different kinds of farming, and you're really trying to take a non-biased look when you've examined the different types that have been put out there.
That's fair, and I think that that's what our research stands for, is that it, too, is fair. Because back in 1980, Bob Rodale, J.I. Rodale, our founder, his son Bob, took over upon his passing. And in 1980, he was in Washington, D.C., with decision makers, policy makers, and he said, okay, well, you know, stop. When are you going to take me seriously? And they said, Bob, we love your passion for organic agriculture, but where's the data? We need science to back it up. And he came back to the Institute, and he said, okay, everybody, I know what to do. And so in 1981, he and a group of scientists designed our farming systems trial. And that trial is the longest trial of its kind, 33 years now, growing conventional right next to organic. And in 2008, we actually went to GMO corn and soy in those trials so that we could mimic and reflect data that was relative and data that was valid to the farmers across the country that were also involved deeply in the GMO movement. And what we found is that after 33 years, and there's not a scientist in the world who would dispute it, yields are the same, conventional, right next to organic. So when the pundits tell us, well, organic can't feed the world, well, if it's based on yields, then neither can they. And if it's based on yields and they can, then so can we. The difference is we build soil. We actually improve the farm every year.
Well, walk people through what happens when you build soil. I mean, you know, we may think, oh, you know, big deal. You know, we you know, our food looks fine in the supermarket. You know, why do we need to build soil more than we are already when the food looks fine that we're buying in the supermarket? But is that food really fine?
We don't think so. There's two systems in place, Elaine. The dominant system is what they call conventional. We think the USDA has that wrong. It's unconventional. That's not the way our food should be grown. They use a well-known science, well-respected science, and it's called chemistry. And they feed plants with synthetic fertilizers. They take care of weed pressure and pest pressure with pesticides. On the other side, on the organic or agricultural side, we deal with a well-known and well-respected science. It's called biology. And we grow right next to nature. We talk about the life in the soil. And we don't use synthetics. We feed the soil and let the microorganisms that live in the soil feed the plants. So J.I. Rodale, in his initial study of soil life, came up with the phrase, and most of your listeners know it, healthy soil, healthy food, healthy people. And
it totally makes sense.
that holds true globally. Wherever you go and the soil's healthy, the food that the people eat there grown in that soil are also healthy. They have great bone structure. They have good teeth. They live into their 90s and they're productive. And it's just...
And they're happy. So, I mean, the emotional state of these people is contentment and happiness, where what really upset me was Howard Ziegler's pig study, where he showed that pigs on GMOs versus non-GMOs were more aggressive, listless, like they didn't care. They weren't able to get through the maze as quickly. And that just, you know, you think about how so many people are acting nowadays, and you kind of are going, is this what's happening to people too? Is our actual brain chemistry and emotions being played with?
Well, we believe so, and we're gathering data on a daily basis. Bob Rodale took his father's words, healthy soil, healthy food, healthy people, and he added the word regenerative. So when we talk about organic agriculture and we use Bob's terminology, regenerative organic agriculture, we're actually talking about making the farm better today than it was yesterday, every day. We make the farm better this year than it was last year, every year.
So the soil just keeps getting better and better.
Exactly. So when I talk about soil life, we're talking about the microorganisms that are underfoot that people don't recognize because you have to look at them underneath the microscope. But that's the stomach of the earth. And that's where the nutrient exchange takes place, in that soil.
And I think of it like a city. Like, you got everyone in there, you know, you got, like, the different kinds of families. They got, like, their different kind of jobs, you know. Okay, I got to go to this today. They all have their own specific little job that they're doing in the soil there. There's, like, you know, a lot going on, and we're not even seeing it.
So think about this. If you can, in your mind's eye, and all your listeners at this point in time, imagine a handful of good, healthy, biological soil. A handful. There's more microorganisms in my palm than there are humans on the face of the earth. Now, if you look at the magnitude of that and the importance of that, that's really truly the difference between organic farming and conventional farming. We help those organisms to thrive. In the conventional system, that if they're pouring a pesticide on a plant because there's a disease or a pest, do you think that it's affecting the microorganisms that are in the soil? Well, indeed it is. So we're helping them to live. The chemical production is indeed, in many cases, killing those organisms. So they're depleting soil. They're creating food synthetically. Nutrition is synthetic. The whole process is man-made, and it's absurd that we're even having the discussion to date that man is smarter than nature, because we're not. And we need to live with nature, and we need to grow our food right next to nature, and we need to allow nature to work with us and us to work with nature. That's the system that's called regenerative organic agriculture.
And it's just kind of a feedback loop, isn't it? I mean, where it's just like it's constantly feeding back to nutrition for our bodies that comes from the soil, and it just, you know, that's the way life is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be that we have to take... And people don't realize that, like, this fertilizer is made from, like, natural gas. So it's like we're depending on natural gas for our nutrition.
We shouldn't be, because it's not there. That's not where it comes from. It comes from the microorganisms that live in the soil. So let me talk about climate change and how this whole system works, because
how does all this tie in to the climate change thing? Because people may not even see that there would be like any kind of connection between agriculture and climate change. They thought that was from cars and industry.
Right. So if you think about the prior to the Industrial Revolution, carbon in the atmosphere represented about 280 parts per million. At 350 parts per million, the planet was still in good balance. There was a carbon cycle, just like a water cycle. There's rain, evaporation. Well, carbon cycles through the Earth's atmosphere. And now I'm going to back you up all the way to like fourth or fifth grade science class, because this is truly how simple it is. Green plants, through photosynthesis, pull carbon dioxide out of the air. Water and sunlight energy convert it into simple sugars. They take a gas and turn it into a liquid through photosynthesis, and they exude it out of their root and feed the microorganisms that live around that root zone. They create candy, cake, and cookies for the microorganisms.
And they love it, too.
Of course they do. So, you know, you have a broccoli plant that's feeding brownies to the microorganisms that live in the soil. It's photosynthesis. And as long as you have a thriving, healthy, biological soil, those microorganisms take in the carbon as simple sugars and hold them in their bodies. Now, through organic practices, which means crop rotation, cover crops, a lot of compost, and reduced tillage, but allow those organisms to hold that carbon in their bodies for long periods of time, and it eventually becomes part of their molecular structure, at which point then that carbon is sequestered for generations, for centuries in some cases. That's carbon sequestration, and that's what regenerative organic agriculture is about. It can't make it any simpler. Photosynthesis and healthy biological soil. That's
they couldn't,
the
like all the other GMO farmers using the pesticides, saying, "Hey, we're doing photosynthesis over here. We're helping."
Their photosynthesis lasts for a year, sometimes less. Because they will come in and spray pesticides that kill microorganisms. And then, of course, every year they do lots of tillage. And so as you run a plow and tillers through that soil, you're actually chewing up and killing. So tilling is killing the microorganisms that live in that soil. And when they die, the carbon is released back up into the atmosphere. Now we are not at that balance point of 350 parts per million. We're at 400, and 400 is creating these historical weather events. So what the government and science is trying to do is mitigate current emissions, lower emissions, create better fuel efficient vehicles, and so on. And it's not working. The numbers keep going up every year. We can actually tip the needle past 100% and begin to draw down the excesses. So we can mitigate 100% of current emissions and begin to move that number of 400 parts per million to 399, 398, 397, and eventually we want to work it back to 350 and put the planet back in balance.
The fact that you mentioned, like, the no-till part of farming versus the constant tilling used by conventional is one of the things that I found the most interesting from your research, because most people wouldn't, like, think, oh, and we don't turn over the soil, we're actually helping the atmosphere. And that's just some of the information that you're going to be talking about when you go to Washington, D.C., all these different types of things. So when you go and meet with these policymakers at Coach, what are you going to say to them? I know, first of all, let's kind of back up and tell everyone, you know, that you've got this information that came out of one of the longest running farming research projects on the planet. And we know that this information is invaluable to trying to reverse climate change. And so knowing that, you just said, hey, I'm going to do this. So what did you decide you were going to do?
Well, what happens every year is that information is created, data is gathered, analysis is released, and now what? What are we going to do with it? What are we going to do about it?
Yeah, what's the action?
Exactly. Oftentimes, there's no action. If you look at the way the government looks at it, they will tell you, well, here's what we want to do by 2030. Well, we want to do something today, not 2030. We want to do something in 2014 that's going to make a difference. And so I decided to take our white paper, our data, our analysis of this problem, and show that there is truly a solution. It's called regenerative organic agriculture, a grassroots solution to climate change. And I am going to leave the Rodale Institute on October 1st and literally walk to Washington, D.C. and hand deliver our paper to the USDA. It's 162 miles. We are gathering walkers on the way. We're meeting with politicians. We're meeting with farmers. We're meeting with business people along the walk. We're creating a lot of energy around the fact that we have an answer. We have a solution. It's not too late. There is good news. It's not
too late. Yeah, that's like the great thing, isn't it? We can change this. We have the information on how to do it. And if we can just get everyone behind it, and, you know, you think, okay, yeah, let's get everyone behind it, but what does that mean? Like, how do we get everyone behind it?
Well, here's what's going to happen. One of two things. Let me tell you a quick story first. I was in Baltimore, Maryland at the Natural Food Expo, Expo East, last week. And we've been very, very quiet about my walk. So we're calling it the Walk for an Organic Planet. And if you put the word organic planet, if people can imagine an org chart, if you put the words organic planet at the top of the org chart, everything that we do in regards to what is good for the earth, it all reports back into the organic planet, if you understand my analogy. So in Baltimore last week, I had a woman walk up to me at the convention center, and she handed me her card, and she said, "I hear you're coming to see us." And I looked at her card, and she was with the USDA. So they already know.
The word's already gotten there.
Yes, indeed.
Coach is on the way, everybody.
Yes, we think two things are going to happen, Elaine. Number one, the USDA is going to take our information and embrace it and begin to change the paradigm of our broken food system. That's our goal. Did you hear that? Can I repeat it? They're going
Please repeat it.
They're going to embrace it, and they're going to change the paradigm of our broken food system.
Now, why would they do that?
Because of the information that you're going to bring them? That's the good news that I'm going to hand deliver. I have the solution. Or they're going to dismiss it, and we're going to hear crickets chirping. Either one of those stories are great next steps. If they embrace it and we begin to move things forward and make this transition to organic, that's the very best scenario that we can hope for.
What about all the people that are going to say this is impossible? You know, our system is too far from that. We don't have enough seed. These farmers, one of the things that I've heard that when the farmers transition to an organic system, those first few years are like really hard for them because it's like the bugs are on like meth or something.
because the soil is weak
and the plants are weak, right? Because the soil hasn't been built up yet, so the bugs come because they know it's a weak plant.
Of course they do. And the reason the system has worked so well to date, for the last 70 years, it's worked really well, this chemical production. It's because the soils in the U.S., for example, are stellar. They're some of the greatest soils in the world. And so it's a no-brainer. You can't lose with the kinds of soils that we have across the Midwest. You couldn't hardly, you couldn't screw it up.
And are farmers alone? I mean, do we all just like look into the USDA, you know, solve this, help us? Or is there other help out there for these farmers to transition? Should they feel like, oh, they just expect me to do this and I'm all alone in this? But
well, yeah, we think at this point in time it's a sociological issue. It's farmers that have been farming with the chemistry for generations. That's the way we've been doing it since my great-granddad, or certainly by as close as my grandfather. And it did work, but it's beginning to fail now, and we're seeing all of the ramifications of the failure of our broken food system. Disease and weed pressure, we're talking about human health issues that we believe are connected to.
And this is for the farmers, too. They get sick. They get sick,
sure,
their families get exposed to all this. This is what upsets me. I love farmers. They're the people that feed us and keep us alive. And they're the ones out there doing all the risk, you know, having to endure all the risk,
right,
you know, with
that's
weather,
right,
and bugs and all this. And they're the ones that usually make the least amount of money in the whole line of things. That's why everyone's supposed to go to farmers markets and buy directly from their farmer and cut out the middleman. You get a better deal. But so many people say, oh, I can't afford organic. And I'm like, yes, you can. Just go. I have a CSA that delivers to my house $25 a week. We've had Leah Dubray from one of your online editors who's a CSA, and, you know, she feeds a lot of families, and it's just such a great deal to get that kind of fresh food organically grown from someone that you've looked at their face. I know them. I love it.
And most of the CSA members across the country are overwhelmed with the amounts of food. They end up giving it away to neighbors and other family members, and it's like, oh my God, I've never seen so much for $25 a week. So,
and what I get is just phenomenal.
It's the best, of course. So we think that the system is in prime for a change. And again, that's the gift that climate change has given us. It is saying to us, you need to make a change. And here's another little bonk on the head when you have a historical winter storm or a historical heat wave or a flood or a drought. I mean, look at Arizona. They're having tropical storms in Arizona. They're having one half a year's rainfall in 24 hours. So we think that we shift the way money is being spent on subsidies and paying farmers for crops that fail, paying farmers for crops that have no real value to our food system. Most of it goes to animal feed and to fuel, ethanol. And so we want to reward farmers. And I must tell you that I'm not bashing the farmers. I'm bashing the system that they have been bought into and that they are now trapped in. And their soils have been depleted. And you're right, that first few years in transition is a scary proposition for them. It's a huge risk for people who are barely, you know, buying new shoes for their children every year. So we have.
Well, this is what I heard, Coach. I read this, that like one out of the billions of dollars of farm bill dollars that we spend, only less than 1% goes to farmers growing fruits and vegetables. Yet the USDA says half our plate needs to be fruits and vegetables to prevent chronic disease. And that just doesn't even like make sense to me whatsoever. You know, why are we doing that? Why are we spending our money like that? That's not helping people stay healthier. And then I also wanted to ask you about a report that came out from NASA where the particulate count in the air was so high that it cost 36 billion in healthcare dollars, which they attributed to conventional farming, and that was half of the profit. So you sit there and you do the math and you say, so when people are sick, I mean, there's so much that goes, a loss that goes with it. Besides healthcare dollars, our country suffers in loss of productivity. You know, people, families, it puts an extra burden on families, you know, having to deal with the sickness. How can people, you know, live life to the fullest? You know, and then they could be facing death even, you know, from something like this. Asthma in our children, just the thought of them not being able to breathe is extremely upsetting. And this whole particulate in the air, is this something that we see with organic farming, a reduction in this type of particulates going into the air?
Yeah, of course. What happens in the conventional soils where you're using chemical fertilizers and chemical inputs, it creates compaction in the soil. And when there's a plowing or even a rain event, those soils on top have no percolation. The water can't flush through the soil. And so it runs off and creates erosion. When it's dry, it's the same thing. There's no life in the soil to hold the aggregates together. When you have good biological soil with organic matter, the soil actually acts like a sponge. The microorganisms and the plants themselves exude proteins, carbohydrates, and simple sugars that act like the glue, and it holds the soil together, and it lessens the particulates that you're talking about. It's dust. There is no dust on organic farms because the soil holds together like, I call it like cake dough. That's the consistency of good organic soil. And when there's issues of drought, we have great evidence and wonderful data that says organic soil and organic agriculture outperforms even the GMO crops that are identified as drought resistant. We outperform them by anywhere from 18 to 33%, and that's because of the organic matter and the life in the soil that holds the water in place like a sponge.
I just think that is so friggin' important, Coach. I mean, I'm living in California, you know, and we're just seeing dead fields, you know, with nut, you know, vines dead on the, you know, dead out there with no green leaves, nothing on them, farmers losing all kinds of money. You're saying that we can be saving all kinds of water with organic farming as another added benefit to all these other things.
The answer to all of these problems, food, water, distribution, pollution, air, the pollution of the air, the pollution of the water, the pollution of our soils, all of it is solved by putting carbon back where it belongs. The soil wants its carbon back. Yes. I want my
carbon back. And who has to pay for all this? Tell me, Coach, I think Dow just was fined like $1.8 million, you know, for something that they did. But when you look at like the big picture of all this and all the destruction that's happened as a result of these farming methods, who is really ultimately paying the bill for this? Is it the chemical companies? Who is really paying for this?
No, typically profits are privatized and losses are socialized. It's the American public.
We're paying for it.
When there's a dead zone in the Chesapeake Bay or zone in the Gulf of Mexico, the cleanup effort doesn't go backwards to who created it. The cleanup effort is put on the shoulders of the American public. And I'm telling you again that it's the carbon and putting it back in the soil where it belongs and getting it back into balance is the answer to all of these issues. The water pollution goes away. The air pollution.
What about nutrition? Nutrition, because like what Dr. Charles Denbrook said on the show through his research was that what's going on in the soil, like all these things that you've been teaching us today, is preventing the plant from being able to put a nutrient in those slots that where the nutrients are supposed to be, because it can't get it from the soil, and so it's just putting like starch there. And so aren't people really just being totally ripped off of nutrition from their food?
Can I tell you that Dr. Charles Benbrook, I call him Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck, yeah, I know.
He's a good friend of mine. He's a wonderful, wonderful scientist, world-renowned with his research. And and you're exactly right. So when he was on your show, evidently he did a great job too. It is the microorganisms in the soil that create nutrient exchange. It's not a synthetic fertilizer that relies on the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. It's a joke. It's about all
it
of
is,
the
it's
micro.
A joke. It's
about
it
all
is
of
a
the,
joke.
It's about the micronutrients. All of those micronutrients that are bound up in the soil that need the microorganisms, the bacteria, the fungi, the nematodes, the microorganisms.
Well, what are those? Why do we need those, Coach? Why do we need those? Why are those so important?
Because they eat the nutrients that live in the soil that are unavailable to the plant. The plant can't take them up without the microorganisms.
That when we eat them, what happens? When we get them, like when we're eating these organic foods versus that have the microorganisms and are giving the plant the nutrients versus these conventional plants that are only getting artificial, this fertilizer from natural gas or whatever, and dead soil, nothing going on in there, no little earthworms or anything.
Yes.
What, you know, when we're eating that food, I mean, to me, it's just like, so I want my body to get these nutrients. I just feel like when I'm eating some of this organic food, Coach, it's just like my body starts having a party when it hits my stomach. They're like, right on, you know, let's get some repairs done. We're making new cells over here. You know, let's get to work, everyone. We got something to work with here. And people eating these foods, and it's just like more like their body, like an alarm is going off, you know, because it's being bombarded with poisons, and it's like on the defense, you know, more than the offense.
I have to tell you that I love
little joke there, in case you didn't catch it. A little basketball joke.
I like the idea of a party, and if you could understand that when green plants, I'm back to photosynthesis again, when green plants pull that carbon dioxide out of the air and turn it into sugar, the party begins down in the soil because all those microorganisms feel the same way you do. They say, here it comes, it's our food. And
yeah, and it's like what they can use. And I, you know, this other stuff, they like, I picture them looking at it going, what the heck is this? What are we supposed to do with it?
Well, they can't.
It's even our body.
What dominates the ag system now is feeding the plants. So the plants look good, the fruits look good, the vegetables look good, but there's no nutrients. We rely on the microorganisms to take what is not available to the plants at the root zone. They eat those nutrients and make it plant available as a water soluble, in a water soluble form. And then the root mass is able to take it up. So we're talking about iron and molybdenum and niacin and, of course, nitrogen, but things like water. So there's a symbiotic relationship between the plant and the microorganisms, because the plant says, here's the candy. I'm sending it down to you in the form of carbon, and now you need to go out and find me what I need, and here's what I need. I need water. I need oxygen. I need holes in the soil for water to percolate through. Can you help me with that, earthworm? And so the whole system is working together the way nature intended it.
What about those good insects too, Coach? The good guys. Everyone thinks insects are bad. But tell people there's like good guys out there too.
It's exactly the same thing. There's balance. So when you see what could be considered a pest by some people, it's actually food for the beneficial insect that comes in and feeds off of that pest. Oftentimes when they spray for the pest, they kill the beneficials too. I mean, there's no way the beneficials are going to defend themselves against the same pesticide that's wiping out the pest that's on the plant. But when you put things in nature and you have healthy soil, what we know since 1947 is that, I'm just going to repeat J.I.'s words, when you have healthy soil, you have healthy food, and the people that eat it are healthy too. And so our goal is always to research and continue to gather data on the soil, focus on the nutritional values of organic food, but ultimately we'd like to work ourselves out of a job, and that's when there's global human health. That's our ultimate goal.
And talk to people for a minute about the difference between freshly picked food versus something that has been in storage for long periods, transported for long distances. Is there benefits to getting something that's freshly picked, organic food, versus something that's been sitting for a long time?
Well, the longer the plant, the fruit or vegetable is away from the plant itself, the more nutrients are lost. I mean, that's just a natural process.
So there's an oxidation process where they're dissipating as time passes.
Yes. And so what trumps everything is local organic. And so, you know, local was very popular for a while. That was the buzzword. But there was no guarantee if it was local that it was indeed organic. So we like to tell everybody to trust the USDA seal, that certified organic seal. That's the way to trust what you're buying. Now, let me tell you quickly about when you're shopping. You know the little stickers that they put on fruits and the POU codes on the vegetables and so on? They all have a number attached. If it starts with the number 9, it's organic. If it starts with any other number, put it back on the shelf and go get your grocery produce manager and tell them you want only organic.
Coach, I still have people that are skeptical about organic. I was just talking to, you know, someone that works with farmers the other day, and you know, they're being all, you know, skeptical. Oh, can I, you know, I don't know if I can, like, really trust that organic seal. What do you say to that?
I would say that we trust it immensely. The Rodale Institute hasn't been involved since the late 80s, early 90s, in helping to develop the standards. We've been on the front of the organic movement, including that label. We trust the label. If you lie and get caught, the penalties are just not worth it. They could put you out of business as a farmer. So we trust the label. We are constantly investigating the National Organic Standards Board and the National Organic Program to make sure that they are holding standards high. It's not perfect, but it's better than anything else that's out there right now.
Well, it's my understanding that conventional companies, they'll buy organic companies, and then that gives them the right to have a seat on the board when really their moneymaker is the conventional crops, bottom line. The profit margin is just, like, way different, way bigger. And so I was just researching a report by the Cornucopia Project where when I worked for Nature's Path Cereals, one of my competitors was Peace Cereal. And since that was bought by one of the big, I call them the Big Ten, they it's like 0%. They went from 100% organic to 0% organic. And last week I was talking about the acquisition of Annie's by General Mills. And in my opinion, working food service for 5 years, they want to make it go away more than they want to make it prosper. And they just see that company cutting into their sales, or they want to have the right to sell to big food service companies like Sodexo, Compass. So, you know, I just don't see, you know, so many people are, Cheerios is like non-GMO. And I say, well, it's still got pesticides, you know, and plus all the rest of their cereals are GMO. It's just, it's like a greenwashing, or I don't know what you call it, kind of washing, but, you know, they give the appearance of all of them being non-GMO as a result of doing one.
And indeed, there is an industrial organic model out there, too. So we think small family farms, we think regionally grown and seasonal availability of food, the way we used to do it back when our grandparents and great-grandparents were alive. That's the way the country lived, and that's the way our food system worked. It was regional, and it was seasonal, and we've moved away from that model, and it's time to fix it. So that's why I'm walking to Washington, D.C., 162 miles. I'm going to hand-deliver the answer.
Well, I'm going to be putting all of the information on our homepage so that they can, they'll be able to click and find all about your walk, Coach. And I know that you guys have a crowdfunding account as well, where you're because you want to take this to another step. You want to take this to another level. You have some things that you think that we need to look at more closely. And so you guys want to continue the research and even find more important information to help us move forward. Is that correct?
That is correct. And this past weekend, we were in New York City for the rally at the
UN. And that was a big rally. You guys had like 300,000 people show up for climate change. No time in history has that ever happened before.
I was also... Now, so pleased to be able to meet Vandana Shiva.
She is fantastic.
She is, and I told her about the walk, and she said, "Oh no, you just created a global initiative. You're coming to India next, and we're going to walk to where Sir Albert Howard started his work."
Oh, that's so great! That is so, great. How did it feel? How did it feel to be there with all those people?
Oh, it was very energizing. It took us about
an hour. Such a wide variety.
It took us about an hour and a half to get to the start. That's how big.
There was no boundaries for religion, for ethnicity. Nothing. There was no boundaries whatsoever. There was every type of person there because this affects all of us, doesn't it, Coach? There is not a single one of us this does not impact.
Well, of course, and you know we're really very concerned, not about us, because what's occurred so far from the climate change is going to continue to happen, and we think in more often and in higher magnitudes if we don't do something in a hurry. And I'm more concerned, and I'm more dedicated to grandchildren, great-grandchildren, you know, the generations to come with what is the legacy that you left behind for us. And our legacy should be that we left a better planet today than it was yesterday, every day.
Isn't that a great gift? What better gift could we give our grandchildren, Coach?
So that's what's important to us, and that's what our work at the Rodale Institute is focused on.
And so then after you go and present this to the policymakers, like we want to join you. I'm going to have people try and, you know, find all the links, you know, to what you guys are doing and be following. And you're going to call us from the road next week, right?
Yes, indeed. We'll have a show from the road. Yes, that's going to be fun.
Okay. All right. And if you could have a farmer maybe that you're talking to, I would love to have them have a chance to to talk to us a little bit.
Sure.
And give us a great report. All right, everyone, just type in Rodale Institute, start learning about them, number one, and go to our website, and I'm going to rush right now. I'm going to get all that information up so we can get started and start joining Coach on this great trek to Washington, D.C. Thanks so much, Coach. Thanks for joining
us
today.
Thank you, Elaine.
Okay, everyone, next Thursday, 4 o'clock, please join us. Stay tuned for the next show, okay? Bye-bye.
Be sure to visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
A precious deposit that came from the mightiest of mountains, created from the strongest forces of nature, and lie hidden for 15 million years beneath the surface of a remote desert, has now been found. A mineral deposit like no other. Nature in its most perfect form. Minerals are one of the key foundations of life and may not always be complete in food, but you can now have all that nature has to offer in one pure source. Ion Charge Minerals bring you 57 ionic minerals to nourish your body with the raw materials it needs to rebuild, revitalize, and help generate energy within every cell. Experience mineral power and the new energy and endurance that is yours when you give your body what it needs to build a stronger you. Visit IonChargeMinerals.com or go to Smart Health Talk website and find out how you can benefit from the power of minerals today.